Hello, everybody. With Bob Christopher, I'm Bob Davis, and this is Basic Gospel. Our very special friend Frank Viola, author of God's Favorite Place on Earth, is joining us today, and we're glad to have you, Frank. Thanks for joining us. We're here live every day to address questions and real-life issues by phone at 1-800-677-9377. If there's something you'd like to talk about, call now, 1-800-677-9377. You know, the Word of God offers true freedom and life in Jesus Christ, and we invite you to stay tuned and take part to learn how the basic gospel intersects with your life every day. Hear it, believe it, live it. It's basic gospel. Bob, I know you join me and Frank and wishing everybody a very happy new year.
Well, yes, indeed. And this is our final program of the year. And so we do want to wish everybody a wonderful 2014. I know God has great things in store for all of us as we learn to trust Him. But as we ended this year, I couldn't think of any better way to do so than to ask our friend Frank Viola to join us. And Frank, welcome to the broadcast again. We sure appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm honored to be on again.
Well, thank you. You've written a book, God's Favorite Place on Earth, and you know, I read quite a bit, and your book, God's Favorite Place on Earth, is one of my top three best reads of this year. I love this book, and we are making it available to anyone who contributes a year-end gift. It's just as our way of saying thanks. But, Frank, I think this is your best work. I love how you've written this. It's personal. It's moving. There are places in it where, you know, I just wept just at the sheer awesome nature of Jesus Christ, just encountering Him in a real personal, intimate way. So I think you've done a masterful job in writing this book, Frank.
Well, I appreciate those kind words. I agree with you. You know, I've written 15 books to date, and I'm calling this my life's work. It's got a great reception among both men and women. And just as you've said, lots of men have written in and said this book moved them to tears, which is very humbling for me to read. I actually wept writing certain parts of it, so it was good that I wasn't alone.
Absolutely. Well, Frank, tell us how you start the book and kind of the point of view that you use to draw the reader in to this particular book.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a hybrid of both narrative, which has a fictional element to it, and nonfiction teaching. Basically, the book is the story of Jesus, his many visits in the little village of Bethany, and it's told from the perspective of Lazarus, who, of course, lived in the village of Bethany with his two sisters, Mary and Martha. And the book begins with just kind of an explanation of what the little village of Bethany was, how it was just 2 miles away from Jerusalem, and how that Jesus Christ, when he entered into this earth, he was rejected everywhere he went, from womb to tomb. You know, there was no room for him in Bethlehem, so he had to be born where animals were fed. He was rejected in Nazareth. The people there, you know, they were very familiar with him. A prophet is not without honor, except in his own hometown. And then he was rejected in Samaria. He was rejected in Jerusalem. In fact, they killed him. And there was only one place on earth where the Son of Man could lay his head, and that was a little village of Bethany, a very obscure town, very small, very tiny, but there was a little family there made up of Lazarus, Mary, and Martha, whom Jesus loved with an uncommon love, and the many visits that he paid there, I tell the story of each of them through the vantage point of Lazarus. Lazarus is an old man. He now tells the story when Jesus came to his hometown and the amazing things that happened there. And after I do that in each section, then I turn on the teaching mode, and I then begin to draw out lessons and applications for us today. And the point is that all of us can be a Bethany on this earth, God's favorite place on earth. if we follow certain principles. So that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, well, I was really moved. You know, one of the stories you tell is, you know, Martha and Mary, they were sisters. They seemed to butt heads at every single point. And, you know, Martha is preparing this dinner for Jesus and a bunch of men that were going to be there. And she gets kind of mad at Mary for not helping and sitting in the room with the men, sitting at the feet of Jesus. And you give some perspective on that, some historical perspective as to the taboo of what was going on, but then bring us into really what was happening there. And that was the chapter that really touched me in just a wonderful way. And describe that scene. Tell us, you know, what was really happening with Mary choosing to sit at the feet of Jesus.
Yeah, you know, there's been so much Martha bashing historically by Christians. And I think a lot of us have got the whole story wrong. You know, we kind of say, well, you know, Martha is the busybody, and then Mary is the quietest, contemplative Christian, and these are two kinds of Christians, and it's better to be a Mary than a Martha. Well, you know, what was really happening is, first of all, Mary was in the kitchen area helping Martha. That's clear from the text. You know, she wasn't one of these people that was too heavenly minded to be no earthly good. You know, she was there helping Martha. But there came a point when Jesus went into the public room and sat with his disciples. His disciples were at his feet. And Mary did something unusual on that day. First of all, she went into the public room where the men were. And, you know, that was a scandal. If you were a woman, you stayed in the kitchen area or the courtyard, or you stayed in the bedroom with your husband or wherever you slept, but you did not go into the public room. That was only for the men. So she crosses this line, which is, like you say, taboo, and then she does something even more scandalous. She sits at the feet of Jesus, and that meant she was taking the posture of a disciple. And women did not do that in the first century. Rabbis did not have women disciples. And what was so amazing about that is Mary intuitively knew that Jesus would have no problem with it, and he didn't. And in fact, I'm sure the other disciples were just aghast at this. And Martha's real complaint was, hey, you know, Jesus, tell her to get back in here. She's acting like a man when she should be acting like a woman. And so, you know, I bring these things out. And all throughout the book, Bob, I weave into the story insights from the culture of the first century that we often miss because we're reading the Bible, what, 21 centuries later, you know?
Right.
And we live in a different world. So it really sheds light on lots of the text. But, you know, Mary was not rebuked at all by Jesus ever. And I make the point that, you know, every Martha that I have ever met, you know, eventually gets burned out by trying to serve the Lord in their own power and strength, and they become very critical and judgmental of other Christians who know the freedom of Christ. And every Mary I have met in my life used to be a Martha at one point. So I bring a lot of lessons out along that line.
Well, that's a profound statement right there, Frank. It, you know, there are a lot of Marthas. I certainly was a Martha in my life, trying to be God's guy. I wanted to be God's guy more than anything on this planet. And I was striving with everything I had in me, but I just failed miserably. And I think that's where most people are as believers today. They're living a Martha life. Self-effort, you know, just try mm-hmm. harder, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But the spiritual truth, the spiritual reality is that the Christian life is not us. It's all about Jesus living his life through us. And I think that's what you're trying to communicate in that particular chapter. And I think that's why it's so powerful.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things, I mean, Martha, bless her heart, she had a great heart. She was a very hospitable woman, and I really give her her due. She was the one that opened the door to her home and received Jesus into her home in Bethany, where he was rejected everywhere else. So I'm not a Martha basher, but you find that Jesus Christ transformed Martha from that very first story where she was striving to please him, but she was doing it in her own power. And when we do that, we become very critical of people who we feel are not serving the Lord as strongly and as zealously as we are. And from that point to the very end of the story of Bethany with Jesus in it, she's a different person. She's still serving. She's still giving. She's still hospitable. But she's drawing from a different energy. She has a different motivation. She's not, you know, anxious. She's not critical of others, you know, and that's what happens when Jesus Christ really does something into our in our hearts when it comes to spiritual service. If we're serving like Martha was in the beginning, out of our own strength and power, and by the way, we don't know that we're doing this when we're doing it. You know, God has to shine his light and show us. But it's either going to lead to burnout or bailout. And bailout is when we say to the Lord, and I've met many Christians like this, I was serving you with everything I had, and here these other people are not taking you as seriously as I have been taking you, not serving you like I have been, and you're blessing them more than me.
It's not fair, and I'm not
going to serve you anymore.
Boy, I know what that is all about. And, you know, I think somewhere in the New Testament it talks about, you know, the person who compares himself by himself or to others. That's not a very wise thing. But we tend to do that, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in the book I have this beautiful quote, and it's this. It matters not if the world has heard or approves or understands. The only applause we're meant to seek is that of nail-scarred hands. And, you know, that's living for the applause of one. And I talk a lot about that. I also talk about how often God does not meet our expectations. In fact, sometimes he doesn't even seem to fulfill his promises in our life. And Lazarus knows all about that, and so does Mary and Martha. You know, remember when he got sick?
Absolutely.
And they sent word to Jesus, and the word came back, and the word that Jesus gave both Mary and Martha when they said, the one whom you love is sick, the word that Jesus sent back was, this sickness is not unto death. Well, how would any reasonable person interpret that except to say that he's going to be fine, he's going to be healed? Well, when Lazarus ends up dead and Jesus doesn't show up, then right there they think to themselves, he did not keep his word. And how many of us have had that happen in our life, where we stood on one of God's promises, or we felt like the Lord gave us a word, or we, you know, read the scripture clearly and it said this and this and that, and we say, Lord, you're going to be faithful, you're going to come through. And he doesn't. And 4 days pass, and we are beyond hope, and we are beyond death, and we're in the grave, and now what? And that's the point where many Christians turn away from the Lord, because he did not meet their expectations. And I have a whole section on that as well. That's been very helpful to many Christians, because I think we've all been there. You know, if you've been a Christian for any length of time, you have met the side of God where he will not meet all of your expectations, and that is a huge test on our faith.
Absolutely. And it's those expectations, you know, sometimes they seem like they should be realistic, but in reality they're oftentimes not realistic, because we're not seeing things from God's perspective. And that story about Lazarus being raised back to life, it gives some really keen insight into what this gospel message is. It's not a self-improvement program. Christianity is not something that makes us better as people. It's about death, burial, and resurrection. And we're looking for physical healing. We're looking for, you know, improvement in our current situation. And God is saying, no, you got to die to that so you can come alive to this new life, this new reality that it's experienced through faith in Jesus Christ. So I find that so many people, you know, who have unmet expectations, it's because they're just seeing things through their eyes instead of through the Lord's. Is that been your case as well?
Yeah, it has been, and there is a side of God that is mysterious. The fact is, He's much larger than us in our understanding. You know, in the book, I point out that sometimes God will deliver you from trouble, but oftentimes He will deliver you through trouble, meaning He doesn't remove, you know, the mountain. He just causes the water to rise up above it so that you can transcend it. And that's the thing. You know, I give a little story. It's actually in the Bible, of the three Hebrew children, you know, and they're getting ready to be thrown in the fiery furnace. And if they don't, you know, bow the knee to the king, the pagan king, and they say something very interesting. They say, God will deliver us. Now, that's a statement of absolute faith. You know, there's not a hint of doubt in that. God will deliver us. But then they come around and say this, but even if He doesn't, if for some reason we've misunderstood the promises of God, if for some reason we got our theology wrong, if for some reason, you know, we meet the mystery of God Himself and He doesn't deliver us, we're still not going to bow the knee to the pagan king. Now, that is faith. To say on the one hand, He is going to deliver me, but I'd say on the other hand, but even if He doesn't, He is bigger than me, He's bigger than my faith, I'm not going to bow the knee, I'm still going to serve Him. And, you know, there's a lot of profound truth in that statement and that little story, and I tie it all into, you know, this whole issue of brokenness and what God is wanting to do and by breaking us. And, you know, we're strong in the broken places. To quote Hemingway, the world breaks everyone, and afterward many are strong in the broken places. And so I treat a lot of the book to that issue, to being criticized and rejected by fellow Christians and how to handle bitterness and hurt. I mean, all these lessons are bound up in the little village of Bethany and Jesus' interactions with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus there. And that's why I wrote the book. I mean, there's so much in this story. And you know, Bob, you can read the New Testament and miss it. You can miss that Jesus' favorite place on earth, the place that He was received, the only place that He was received was this little village of Bethany, because it's spread out all throughout the Gospels. And what I do in the book is I put it all together and put it in chronological order and tell it as a narrative from the lips of Lazarus himself. And it just comes alive.
It really does. Well, this is Basic Gospel. Our special guest today is Frank Viola. His book, God's Favorite Place on Earth, is just a powerful read. One blogger said this: the best thing I can say about Frank Viola is this: when I read his books, and I read them all, I don't think much about Frank. I think about Jesus, and I learn to love Him more. If you want to have a special personal encounter with the Lord Jesus Christ, this is a must-read book, God's Favorite Place on Earth. It's our gift to you today for a gift of any amount to Basic Gospel. We need your help at the end of the year, and we couldn't think of any more special gift, expression of thanks from our hearts to yours, than offering this particular book by Frank. There are many things, Frank, that you list out as far as benefits to the reader, and I think that's the big thing that moves people to pick up a book. What am I going to get out of this? And some of the things that you say this book will do for people: it will help them be set free from bitterness, will help them gain God's peace and presence in the midst of their worst storm. They'll find out what it truly means to follow Him, not just, you know, in salvation, but in a day-to-day walk with the Lord. What are some other things that people have said have meant so much to them after reading this particular book?
Yeah, a couple of them were how to get to the place where you're beyond being offended. You know, it's so easy for Christian people to get offended, especially at other Christians, you know, when things don't go their way. And so this book really contains lots of practical teaching on how to get to that place where you're unoffendable. You know, Jesus, it's the forgotten beatitude. Jesus said, "Blessed is he who is not offended in me." And that extends to being offended with other people. Being set free from a guilty conscience is another big point of the book. And another one is just, you know, we hear so much Christian teaching, and, you know, God's people have their notebooks full of lesson after lesson of things we need to focus on, things we need to work on. But this book, God's Favorite Place, really reduces and juices down the whole Christian life to one thing, one vision, one governing pursuit, and that is to be a Bethany on the earth for the Lord. The Lord came into the earth. He said, foxes have holes and birds have nests, but there's nowhere where the Son of Man can lay his head. Well, there was only one exception to that, and that was the little village of Bethany. It was the place, the only place on earth where he was received, where he was loved, where he was a home. He felt at home. It was a place of retreat. I mean, he loved to go to Bethany. And the very last week of his life on earth as a man, before he ascended, you know, and died and rose again and ascended, the last week of his life, he would go to Jerusalem in the daytime and teach, and then he would come back to the little village of Bethany where he would spend the night. He would not spend a single night in Jerusalem.
Well, Frank, let me ask you this. In about a minute, and that's about what we have left,
yeah, okay.
Describe what it means to be a Bethany. How can I be a Bethany for Jesus Christ today?
Well, it starts out with receiving him, and that's how Bethany is described. It was the place where Martha and Mary and Lazarus received Jesus. And to receive Jesus means to receive all that he is, you know. It also means to receive all who are a part of him. You know, I can't say I receive Jesus, but I reject Bob Christopher, because you're part of his body.
Right, absolutely.
So you know, it means to receive him and to give him, to put him in his place, to give him the place of headship, supremacy, and the first place in all things, and receive all whom he has received and all the different aspects of Christ. And I talk about that and expand that and unpack that in the book itself.
Well, Frank, we sure appreciate your time today.
Yes,
boy, this has gone fast. And we want to mention to our listeners that Frank's book, God's Favorite Place on Earth, is our gift to you for a gift of any amount to Basic Gospel right here at the end of the year. Frank, thank you for being a part of this program. We'll look forward to some more time together in 2014.
And thanks to everybody for joining us for this edition. You know, at Basic Gospel, we bring biblical truth to the airwaves every broadcast day. And as we close today's broadcast, the final broadcast of 2013, we do so with the truth that we need your help. We hope that the 2013 will end with us in the black and begin the new year on solid financial footing. To do so, we need to hear from as many of you as possible before the end of the business day today. A gift of $50, $100, $250 or more will make a tremendous difference. The need is great, but a lot of us doing something will help to meet that need in a very powerful way. Each day we hear from listeners who are troubled, confused, and tired, who need the powerfully simple proclamation of the gospel of Jesus Christ, to cut through the clutter and bring clarity to their lives. Basic Gospel is an answer to their need. That's what we are asking you to support. It's worthy of an investment, any investment that you can make. It'll make a difference to this ministry, but truly, it'll make a difference in the lives of people wherever this broadcast is heard. It's easy to help by calling 1-800-727-2828 right now, as a matter of fact. Our office closes at 6 p.m. Central Time, so you have a couple of hours left to make that call today. Again, that number, 800-727-2828. Or you can click Donate Now when you visit basicgospel.net. That's basicgospel.net. Also, you can donate by regular mail addressed to Basic Gospel at 1225 East Rosemead Parkway, Carrollton, Texas, 75007. That's 1225 East Rosemead Parkway, Carrollton, Texas, 75007. Please be sure your gift is postmarked or submitted online before midnight tonight. And thank you for responding to the Basic Gospel need. Together we can make a difference, and may God richly bless you in 2014. And Bob Christopher, I have to say to you and the staff, it's been a privilege to serve with all of you during this year of 2013, and we look forward to 2014. So now for Bob Christopher, for Richard Pfeiffer, and Frank Viola, as a matter of fact, and for the Basic Gospel staff, I'm Bob Davis, wishing you a very happy new year. Bye-bye.